Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Our game for this episode is Papers, Please. It's a bureaucracy simulator.
You play as a customs officer border security guy in a fictional Eastern Bloc Soviet...
Arstotzka. Glory to Arstotzka! What you're doing is you're checking people's entry papers to get into a country.
And the game constantly, are you going to have enough money to survive?
Well, if you switch them on and off between them, then...
Good old min-maxer here. Just starve your family on alternating
exactly.
days.
Exactly!
That's Sunday, which means that you starve, but tomorrow you eat and you freeze.
Exactly!
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, and lay maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Urquhart Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
I was hoping you'd be dead so that I'd be debt-free.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back on this episode. We're going to be talking about Boku no Natsu Yasumi, or I guess My Summer Vacation is how it's usually translated. I know that Natsu means summer, so Yasumi must mean vacation.
You got that right, yes.
Yes. Yay! That's like a B-minus right there, I think, automatically. So this game was nominated by... Snoogans775 on Stitcher. Hey there, shout out to Snoogans. Sounds like a... I don't know what that sounds like. Snoogans. It was developed by Millennium Kitchen and published by Sony Computer Entertainment for the PlayStation 1 on June 22nd, 2000 in Japan. Who's with me to talk about Boku no Natsu Yasumi?
I'm Owen Ronan, coming to you from Japan, where this game takes place.
Oh, nice. I'm Ray Barnholt, and you've pulled me out of retirement since the last 5 minutes since we did the last episode to talk about this game. Thank you for having me again.
I think what you meant to say was in the future when we record the Bomberman episode, which we definitely do not
future,
do out of
past.
Sequence.
Okay, fine. Yeah. podcasting is so hard.
I know. We try so hard to maintain the illusion that we're just meeting up every night talking about games, and actually we don't do that.
Gosh darn it. Well, I mean, okay. If I can
legitimize... No, it's okay. I don't.
No, wait a minute. I just want to say, you've also pulled me out of retirement from talking about this game.
True, just when you thought you were out.
Yeah.
Yeah, pulled you back in. So why... So first, let's do it. Even though the other episode has a pretty thorough... plug section, but like where would we know you from?
Ray.
Sure. Okay. Let's do this like we haven't done it before. I'm Ray. You may know me, I guess, best, at least from the Retronauts podcast, as far as podcasts go. Since this is a podcast, I'm going to stop saying podcast now. In between that, I did a magazine called Scroll, which ties into what we're talking about today. But now I also make games with my own little company called Bipedal Dog. And I released a game a couple years ago called Blast Rush, which is on mobile right now.
Yeah, it's on iOS and Android.
Yeah, anything else, Bob?
You covered both of the bases. And coming soon to game.com.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I probably shouldn't commit you to that.
Oh, no, that's fine. Dev kit's hard to get, but, I'll try it out.
So, yeah, you'll hear more about Blast Rush and the Bomberman episode, because I guess we felt like that one wasn't going to be long enough. But stay tuned for that. But it is a very cool game. If you like shooters and you want a shooter that's all giant bomb explosions, that's the game for you. And believe it or not, that does not make it any easier. It's still quite challenging and quite fun.
Absolutely.
And do not Google Bipedal Dog. Just go to bipedal.dog.
yeah, that's the website.
.com.
Yeah, Google image search will be a bit depressing, but,
I mean, I'm glad the dogs are living their best life, but
that's what I'd like to promote. Yeah. That's what the logo is. A dog living its best life is for,
That's right. That dog looks happy to just be alive and out there walking on two feet. So yeah, Boku no Natsuyasumi. So you're, we actually were very lucky to get Ray for this because,
boy, howdy.
We were going to have, the website, the HG101 founder, Kurt Collada, and he couldn't make it. And we're like, oh no, it's just going to be me and Oren. And I haven't actually met or talked to Oren before. And,
and also I did play this game before, but it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So it was going to be one of our dynamite episodes where we were just bringing all the knowledge. And amazingly enough, just by pure happenstance, this was not planned out. We had probably the single best person in the United States of America to talk about this game because he's actually interviewed the creator of this game.
Correct. Yes. I think it was planned. I think that was Kurt's long con here is that he knew I was going to be around here and he said, oh, I got to go all of a sudden. Go check the oven. Sorry,
rascal.
Just razzing you, Kurt.
Right.
That was a few years ago, but you actually went to Japan to interview the creator, right?
That was correct. My first and only Kickstarter to do that.
Which was really cool. And a lot of the interviews just up on the Scroll website, I think.
Pretty much the entire transcript is free to read. But, if you want the fancy article version, you can get the magazine as well. And
I did read the entire issue again in preparation for this podcast this week.
Yeah. Well, since
we're going to have to right now.
I kind of did. That's kind of how I prepared, actually. So if some of my thoughts sound mysteriously like Ray's, that's why.
We all read the magazine. I read it. So I think we're all just going to basically be ending up repeating the magazine, which is fine by me because I wrote it. I like it. But
you should check that. But since we'll be talking about Blast Rush in more detail on another episode, we should talk about Scroll, even though it's been retired. It's still for sale, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is still published by my company, Bipedal Dog, essentially. So I just kept it up, and it's free to get. I mean, not free. Free. You do have to pay for some of them.
Not free. You have to pay for it. Yeah.
I mean, it's freely on the internet. It has freedom, is what I mean.
It's like free in terms of like free markets.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Thank you.
I paid for it, and so should you.
It's my favorite video game zine. I am not aware of too many other video game zines, but the ones I've seen are garbage compared to Scroll.
Whoa, okay.
That's right. Hot takes. No, I mean, it's like, it's a zine. It's like, it's made by basically usually just you, but maybe some help. I know you've had, I know the Dragon Quest issue. There's no way you did that entirely by yourself.
Well, half of it.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about. And, but it's like video game magazines were done with some kind of attention to detail and page layout. It's very artfully done. How many issues total? Like
12.
20? Oh.
Whoa, slow down.
I'm trying to think. It's a 20 in my heart because
It felt like
20. There's the Scroll issues that I just knew were coming if only. But no, I mean, there's great stuff. There's a Ninja Turtles magazine. There's a magazine all about cheat codes. There's one about this game. There's one about, I think,
Cute Mascots is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
HD 101 readers will really like the Xbox in Japan issue, which is all about the weird games that came out for the Xbox in Japan.
That's my favorite.
It's a really good, I mean, because you're not going to play them. I mean, finally, you can play Metal Wolf Chaos.
Yeah, but, I played all of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's definitely cool and worth checking out. And, you know, they're evergreen. It's evergreen content out there, kids. It's just as good today as it was when it was released. Except the Dragon Quest one, because I guess there's been more Dragon Quest games. But up to that point,
it's mostly very retro. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Dragon Quest one is actually excellent. That's a great, if you want to get into Dragon Quest, that will convince you. So anyway, yeah, getting back to my summer vacation. Can we just call it that? Do I have to say the Japanese?
No, title? That's fine. Yes. I mean, I have ended up just calling it Boku for short over the years.
Which is kind of funny because the name is kind of a pun, right? Oren, can you confirm that?
It's not much of a pun, just that his name is basically I or me.
Right, but that's the character's name, right? So
it's more complicated than that because young boys usually are called Boku-chan in Japan when they're young. But
right,
yeah, well, but Boku is not really a name.
If I can get extra weeb about it, the way it's written in Hiragana, the game's title is not really a reference to the character's name, which is written in katakana. So there you go.
That's right.
How about that?
I
have the strategy guide for this game right in front of me, and it's like structured like an activity book. And has his name on the bottom. It's written in katakana, for sure.
Wow.
Right off the bat.
I'm so glad I'm here for this. I thought I knew, I was like, I know part of one of these words. I'm a winner. So yeah, it's an adventure game of sorts. It is more like a nostalgia experience. And it's a very particular kind of nostalgia. It's based around the creator's memories of going out to the countryside when he was probably the same age as the protagonist, I'm guessing about 8 or 9 years old, and the Japanese countryside in particular. So lots and lots of cicadas. If you grew up around lake, you'll kind of know what's going on. But
actually, I can hear cicadas right now. It's outside my window. I'm in the game.
The semi is what everybody was referring to them when last time I was in Kyoto, because they get extremely loud, and that's like not like a remote city. That's like a major city.
I just got back from Pennsylvania, where the cicadas are also very loud, because we kind of don't have them here where I live on the West Coast. It's like,
yeah,
it's a bit drier, I guess.
So yeah, it's like, it's going to the countryside. If you ever seen the movie My Neighbor Totoro, it's kind of like that, except there's no like giant magical like panda bear thing.
Or pretty much any anime that takes place during the summer. And it's really like that. I mean, you go outside anywhere in Japan during the summer, it's noisy.
Yeah, I mean, but the atmosphere, I think, or the nostalgia factor of the game. So it's like it's dealing with this kind of, I don't want to say it's romanticized, because you've ever been out to these parts of Japan, and there's a lot of them. It really still does look a lot like the kind of world you see in this game. So I've been to Izumo, right, which is like way down south, but it's not quite the same area, but it is definitely like Totoro country. If Totoro were going to appear, that's probably where you'd do it. And so there's kind of like this like heartwarming, like chicken soup for the soul kind of thing that only, I'm not sure how well it translates outside of like a Japanese audience. Anyone want to prove me wrong about that? Or?
Well, I mean, it kind of does romanticize things, because it does use a lot of those sorts of, I guess, stereotypical elements like the cicadas and, you know, the big sunflower fields and all that sorts of stuff. And this stretches throughout the entire series of this game. Some things are relatable as well, because it's not just like nostalgia bait. You do get to go out and explore and basically just appreciate the scenery around you, even though in the game it's basically painted backgrounds, but you still get to do what you want. And not necessarily just, you know, become a slave to the sort of cliches or whatever of summer, according to Japanese culture.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're not like, it's not like a visual novel. Yeah,
right. And that's why I fell in love with it, essentially.
I will say it is pretty strange to play this game as someone who didn't grow up in Japan, because you're kind of looking at it from far away. You didn't actually experience like what these things are the ideal version of.
That's kind of how I feel. It's like, I get it, because I know, like, if you were to, I can't think of like an exact equivalent. I mean, I grew up like not in like a major like is a very suburban place, but it's kind of like right on the edge of the suburbs. And so there was like, you know, if you went down to the end of my street, there was like a giant cornfield and we'd go get corn on the cob every summer and do stuff like that, get like fresh eggs and things. So there was like, you know, I can kind of get it, but there's also like, think in Japan, there's like this weird sense of kind of like the disappearing countryside or the disappearing country life, which is true. There's like currently, like, I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, Oren, but I think there's like kind of a, some kind of governmental push to sort of get people to invest in, you know, start businesses in smaller towns and kind of keep those areas alive. But this is also this weird sense that now, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my impression was always that there's a idea that this is the real Japan to Japanese people, but everybody kind of knows that nobody, they don't actually live there. It's like, yes, this is really what, this is like the heartland sort of.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go there.
nobody lives in the countryside anymore. Everyone lives in cities now. But yeah, I guess this is kind of the romanticized version of Japanese life.
I mean, in this one, it's not exactly like Totoro, because Totoro takes place, I think, in the 1950s. It's the, you know, they're living in like the traditional house with like the walls that you can slide away, and which, you ever have a chance to stay in a place like that, it's awesome. If you like mosquito bites, especially.
So, yeah, this game takes place in 1975, so it's a bit farther away from the war, and you know, you do get a little bit of hints of it, like from the aunt character who talked about when she was a kid during the war and all that. But yeah, not quite on the same sort of wavelength as Totoro.
But there's this idea of like the wonderment of childhood and all that. And
right.
And the kind of weird connection to nature that I don't think that as American I really will ever have. And there's some weird stuff. Like at the very beginning of this game is a, not really a cut scene exactly, but it's like, Your dad is driving you out to the countryside to stay with your aunt and uncle because your mother is in her last month of pregnancy, and they kind of want you to sort of not be a nuisance to her, I guess, or like kind of make it easy on her. Cause
yeah,
but also it's hard to tell
to get to know his cousins and everything. So yeah,
right. Yeah, it's interesting. You can, if you can't read Japanese, you can. So there's a playthrough on YouTube where somebody's put up closed captions of very, very literally translated Japanese. So it's going to sound like people are being, being really rude to each other, but they're not. it's like, I'm going to make myself a burden to you this summer is one of the translations, which I really love. Yeah. Well, you know, hey, look, they're trying, you know, it's somebody out there made the effort to make the game, you know, so that we could, you know, people could appreciate it.
Got to start something.
Cause I don't think it's been translated by anybody. I don't think there's a translation patch for this game.
No, it would be pretty difficult just because of the vertical text.
Right.
But can we talk a little bit about what you actually do in the game?
Yeah, please.
One of the things I like about this game is that you don't actually have to do anything. If you want to, you can just spend the entire summer inside and do nothing.
Yes.
Or if you want to, you can go outside and do stuff. Yeah. And the game doesn't really care. I mean, there's the kind of like different endings depending on what you do, but for the most part, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's not like your mom dies if you don't make enough friends or something.
Yeah. if only. that's maybe if it was developed by someone else, but yeah, not quite.
If only you had said hi to that girl.
Yeah. You don't have that much choice, thank God. But it's not exactly an open world game either, because, I mean, you are kind of pushed along a narrative path. Okay, more like a nudge. But, I mean, if you want the full experience, you obviously want to get as much of the story as you can out of it. Because otherwise, yeah, you are basically just looking at pictures most of the time. And then it's like over in a few hours.
So what does the game encourage you to do? And do you think that what it's encouraging you to do is any kind of message about like what you should do with, not necessarily your summer, but like with your life?
There are basically all sorts of events that happen in the world, and they're mostly time-based, so you can miss them if you don't do them in time.
That's realistic.
Yeah, the game just lets you wander around and find them. It nudges us towards them, of course, but...
Yeah.
There is something to be said. There's not a lot of games where like stuff will happen, and if you're not there, you don't see it. Because most games want you to see what they do.
You also have to collect bugs. That's the other thing you have to do.
You have collection. Bug collecting. And do you make them battle to the death?
You can.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, one of the first images in the game is when it's talking about how It's like you're going out to the countryside, and there's a beautiful shot of clouds, which one of many that you'll get throughout the game. They really did go out to the area where the game takes place and take pictures of clouds. You can read all about it. Scroll.vg.
That's right.
And but then there's like an image of a praying mantis like destroying a butterfly and eating it. And then there's like the voiceover text is saying something. The translation is really weird. I'm not sure what they're actually saying, but it's pretty bizarre if you think about it too hard. But if you think, oh, that's just like the cycle of nature and it's all beautiful, even the butterfly that's been torn into four pieces.
I don't think we mentioned that the game is narrated by an older Boku.
Yes. So you know that you don't die. Spoiler.
Yeah.
I guess he could be speaking from beyond the grave, but...
Well, depending on the bad ending, it could be like a grave of boredom.
Yeah. So about that, like, yeah, anyway, like, so like what kind of stuff does the game kind of, I guess we didn't really get to that. Like what other kinds of things, like what is it, what do you get to see? What do you get to, what happens if you pay attention in the game?
Well, let's see. Well, it takes place, like we touched on, at Boku's aunt and uncle's house out in the country. And basically around there, they have like a forest and a stream, and you can, you just walk around these areas. Again, it's all like in pre-rendered or painted background. So it actually plays a lot like Resident Evil, different tone, but, you basically, you know, you walk through these screens and explore the environment. And at first, a lot of the environment is blocked off by like logs or some other sign or something else that you will need to clear out, or maybe it automatically clears out as part of the story after a few days of in-game time. But after that, you know, you just also have other characters who basically hang out around this area, not just the relatives, but also some of the townsfolk and like the neighbor kids, for example. And you can essentially get into these, you know, story events with them and build out your picture diary, which is basically how you get the best ending, is to have the most eventful sorts of summer and follow as many of the coded plot lines as you can.
And is there sort of like, does it encourage you to like replay the game if you miss some of the stuff, or is it kind of designed to be like every time, you know, everybody plays it once and whatever you get to see is what you get to see?
I don't know. How would you characterize that, Oren? I mean, have you played a lot of, over and over again?
Yeah, I guess you kind of realize if you didn't do most of the stuff. So, if you get one of the worst endings, it's nice to go back and replay it and try to find more stuff. But it doesn't really push you towards it. I mean, just kind of an experience kind of game.
Yeah, you get the same ending movie, but the real ending scene is like a post credits thing, and it's just like a picture, and you get to another narration where it's like, oh, I ended up like this or whatever. So yeah. Most of the time, you get the main plot points pretty much no matter what you do.
Spoiler alert: you're a grown up Fred Savage.
Oh man,
didn't see that coming. It's like it's the way the game is presented too is kind of interesting, because as we said, there's a lot of, you know, it's like a lot of painted backgrounds and stuff. There's a lot of you know, things that are obviously just not necessarily digitized photographs. I think they're painted.
Yeah, so they're done by a company called Kusanagi, and they do all sorts of background artwork for anime and games and everything. They've done stuff for some of the Final Fantasy games even, so they got to work on this, and they are very good at basically creating these sorts of very scenic backgrounds that most, you know, some of the ones, you know, for certain anime, they will be based on certain real locations. But this is mostly made up just based on reference photography.
It's a very pretty game, though. I would love to see an HD remaster of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be impossible, though, because I don't think, unless they hand-painted things and then digitized the painting.
Probably hand-painted. It looks hand-painted, I think.
I guess, yeah, that's true. That'd probably be the easiest way of doing it at that
point. Yeah, I don't need the exact method, but, you know, there are art books with, you know, certain scenes from these games. So they could,
yeah,
you know, if you scanned them really well, you could get an HD version.
But I feel like the polygonal character models would look even more like creepy, though, if you tried to do anything with them.
Well, I've played the PSP ones upscaled, so I already know how creepy it looks.
Yeah, and there's a PS3 game. One of them is the PS3. True. So there are like HD versions of these models.
They make the people look better, right? It's not like your dad doesn't look like a tall Charlie Brown anymore, right?
Well, I mean, they have the same faces because the character designer, that's her style. But, I mean, the models will have greater detail.
Yeah.
Faces look the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting the way the game, like, especially the opening part of it, kind of weaves in like the little animations and stuff into the thing. It's into the story. It and the way it unfolds. It's really. I was impressed. I got to be honest. Like, I'm not used to things being integrated that well. Usually, when you get like an anime cutscene or something, it's like a long cutscene, and it's like it stops the game or whatever, or even the cutscene that it's in.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Where this one, it's kind of stitched together a little bit, and I mean, it's obviously not the same thing. You're not looking at it, it's like, wow, is that in engine or something? And no, it's not. It's a cartoon, but it fits together really well, and there's a lot of, you know, like long, slow establishing shots of the wherever you are, and like, you know, with the cicadas and the trees and or whatever they're going to show you. But that's really, I think, a big part of the appeal, at least for me, especially because I can't understand most of the game. So,
yeah, well, I mean, that's how I got into it. You know, I grew up in a more countryside sort of place as a kid, and so, you know, near the forest and the hills and stuff, so obviously this really attracted me first off, because it's like, oh, it's a game that really speaks to me, basically. And so, you know, I dove into it like that, whether or not I knew a whole lot of Japanese. I mean, luckily I was already a weeb, so it was a natural dovetailing of things.
Yeah, I got into it after I already knew Japanese, so I guess it's kind of a different experience if you actually understand what's going on.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, what was that like? I mean, you live there now.
Yeah. Though I have to say that the narrator, who I guess is a comedian, do you know, Ray?
I don't think a comedian, maybe just a personality. I forget his whole biography, really, but it was like a famous sort of known actor type.
Anyway, he's an old Japanese man, and I can't understand. I can't understand what he's saying most of the time because he just mumbles.
And really?
And the sound balance isn't very good in this game, and there's no subtitles for when he speaks most of the time. So I just struggled with that.
Oh yeah, especially in the FMVs. Yeah, it's weird sound mixing. I will say he got more expressive in the later games. He did sound a bit more vibrant. So
I really want to know what this guy's career is.
Yeah, his name is Duncan, you know, just like it's a stage name, obviously. I don't remember his entire history.
I believe he's a comedian.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
Japan is a place where you can have a career as a guy who talks about people who are eating food on TV.
Yeah, I mean, you say comedian. Like,
that can be your job.
It's like everybody on TV in Japan is a comedian, really.
You're like in the lower, like, 20% of the
comedian
screen.
Or an idol.
Yeah.
You're watching some lady eat something and say, oh, was she? And then you make a joke, and that's your job. Like, that's what you do. As best I can tell, that's a career path. Yeah,
that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I love. But, you know, there's also, like, an appreciation for this kind of slice of life stuff in Japan to this day that I think doesn't really exist in the United States. For instance, there's, like, you know, when I was over there last, I was like, I got really invested in this TV show where they just follow around, like, a family in, like, the Italian countryside. It's like, okay, this guy makes pipes. Nobody smokes pipes anymore, but he still makes them.
And yeah, there's lots of things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's wildly popular. I don't know, but it's been on the air for quite a while.
I mean, we touched on it. Like, this is basically a lot of the summer cliche that you see in a lot of Japanese media. Not just Ghibli movies, you know, it's in everything. I just think the difference here is that, you know, this is the first time it was really adapted into a video game.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, if you're talking about video games, you can find most of these things in Animal Crossing, for example. A lot of the same tropes.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, it's basically also contemporary. So
Yeah. I mean, but there's touches of this kind of sort of nostalgia aesthetic in, like, say, Earthbound or something. But it's not, obviously, Earthbound's like a very different kind of game.
Right,
it's not,
right, yeah.
And it's also not dealing strictly with, like, a Japanese, like, nostalgia. It's like a made-up, fakey Americana thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't really, it's not really meant to be any one particular place. Yeah. What else do you want to say? It's hard to promote this game or encourage people to try it, because if you can't understand it, I don't know whether you really do want to go watch the
it's a pretty game to just wander around and see what you can find, even if you don't understand what they're saying.
I think there's a later game in the series that has a fan translation, but I don't know how good it is.
I think there's the Not in this series, but that 3DS game that's kind of like this.
Yes.
Has a translation?
Right. Attack of the Friday Monsters. Yeah, that wasn't released in English, but not part of this series necessarily. Just very, very similar.
Yeah. So
same creator and everything.
That's something you could check out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would. And that, I mean, that's a good sampler, too, because that game's like 2 hours long. Like, literally. So you can just try that out and get a sense of what it's like. But, I mean, it is different. It has more mysticism, obviously. It's more about kaiju stuff, essentially.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, I fall back on just, like, if you kind of grew up in a same in a similar place, or if you just enjoy that sort of country scenery, like, this game, you know, will probably touch you in a similar way that it did me. And, and now that I have learned a bit more about the stories in each of the games, it's just like it's even more appreciable to me.
Now, if the one thing I do want to say, the one negative thing I want to say, is that I really don't like the control in this game.
Yeah.
it's tank controls, and they're not good.
Yeah,
and
but
the way the game works is that time passes every time you change, the screen changes.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it controls you sometimes just triggers screen changes without even meaning to. And you can miss a lot just by passing time without doing anything.
Master the tank controls or your mom dies. I guess if I were to say, like, if you can't understand this game, and you don't necessarily want to watch the weird Babelfish translation on YouTube, although I don't think it's that terrible for what it is. I do think you'll get, just understand that people are not being incredibly rude to each other. That's just what you need to know. They're talking to each other like normal people. I would say this, if you're thinking about going to Japan, as a tourist, they have video games there. That's true. but it's also a place of like absolutely staggering, heartbreaking natural beauty. It's just a chain of volcanically formed islands. People just live in these places like this, like it's no big deal. It's incredibly gorgeous. And you can get a train ticket from just about any major city in within 45 minutes. You'll be in an absolutely gorgeous part of the world that really you can't. That's what I would do. I would say I recommend that. And I think that the game's creator would hopefully endorse that sentiment, because that's probably the best you can do.
Yeah,
but I do encourage you to do that.
So the creator Kazayabe, he's from Hokkaido. He was born and raised there, which is like, even before I knew about this game, like I always kind of wanted to go to Hokkaido because it kind of reminded me of where I grew up as well. So it was just like, boy, that's the place to go when I finally am ready to explore Japan's natural beauty is there as well. Mm-hmm. And then the other places that, you know, the other games are sort of loosely based on, like the Izu Peninsula is sort of the backdrop for the second game. And the Seto Islands are kind of the place in the fourth game as well. So, I mean, either way, I think it goes both ways. You can play the game and just sort of get your tourism idea that way as well. Or just start from going to the country and then appreciate the game later.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, there's any number of ways of doing it. But just, I guess the sentiment would just be, you know, you like video games, you're listening to this show, that's great. But, you know, there's other things you can see and do. You know, it's like, it's okay to, like, yeah.
Get outside. There, I'll say it.
Yeah. What would you say? I mean, as a person who lives there, Oren, like, I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't live in the countryside. I live in a city near Tokyo. But I've been to the countryside. And yeah, Japan is a beautiful place. I mean, definitely, if anyone comes here, don't just stay in Tokyo and even Kyoto. Go somewhere more remote and look at the nature. And yeah, this game is definitely a way to get a taste of this before coming here. This game and I think the sequels even more, because this game takes place in Kanto, in North Kanto, which is a very, it's a nice place. It's beautiful, but it's not very touristy. And the later games are much more like in places a tourist might, it's easier for tourists to get into.
Yeah, for sure. They really highlight the fact that it's more of a destination.
Yeah, I think because it's not based on like places that the creator spent time in, right? It's
not as too specifically.
Child. Yeah. Yeah.
The second game is the Hokkaido one, right?
No, third.
The third, okay.
Yeah, the PS3 one.
Yeah, so I guess we got to rank this esoteric little nugget of joy. I don't really know how we're going to do this. This is going to be a disaster. Obvious comparison point here is Tulip.
Oh yeah. Yeah, which I love that game too.
It's not the worst comparison, but it's really not the same kind of game. It's just got Tulip is even more whimsical, perhaps to a fault.
But when you think of like left of center sort of adventure-ish PlayStation universe sort of games, like, yeah, I those are on the list.
What I like about this one though is that you could live out like kind of the life of the main character in this game without getting arrested, which is not the case with Tulip.
True. Yeah. There's not. Yeah. Nothing much like that.
But yeah, so we're, I don't even remember where we put that. So Tulip is currently ranked pretty low.
that's a problem because this shouldn't be that low.
No, but I mean, I'm just kind of to give you an idea of like, that's a similar game, but I don't think it's really a fair comparison in terms of quality. Not that Tulip is really that bad. It's more that like Tulip is very frustrating. It's a more gamey gamer kind of adventure and there are consequences for failure. Things like that. There's a lot of holes and people living in holes and falling in holes. And you can die. And when you die, like people run up and kick your corpse, things like that. It's a little weird. But in terms of like, I don't really know, like, it sounds like both of you would agree. This is not the best game in the series.
No, not in the series, like in a more objective sense. No, I would always recommend the second one or the fourth one the most. I certainly love this. This is my favorite game because first one, sentimental. But yeah, they did improve on, things like the controls. I mean, there's still tank controls, but, they did improve on
something. They put them pretty much in everything, I think, later games.
A lot more characters, a lot more different stories and things.
I'm trying to find games on this list that aren't necessarily about Japan or nature, but about atmospheric and less about gameplay and more about the atmosphere. See Kentucky Route Zero at 116.
I think that's much better comparison. Thank you. That's very good.
No, Tulip was a good start. I'm not going to fault you for that one.
No, I mean, that's true. Like, just, I mean, it doesn't have to be like a Japanese kind of mise-en-scene type of game.
Yeah, no.
It can be.
Yeah, Kentucky Route Zero. Yeah, that's a good one,
Kentucky
too.
Kentucky Route Zero is a very good example.
It's sort of location-based,
but it's got this like kind of romanticism. Like, it's like a magical realism type thing. But the whole, there's also sort of a weird abstractness to the way it's presented that this game kind of does with the way the characters are drawn. Although most of the environments are much more realistically presented. Yeah. So it's like, and before we go, like I would compare, we mentioned, like the painted backgrounds and stuff like that, and how that was like a kind of only a thing on the original PlayStation. We don't see that too much afterwards. And it allows for some details in the environments that I think are really very true to life. For instance, like when you first get taken up to your bedroom, you see the room. And I think to me, like my knee-jerk reaction is that is a dirty ass room. And I don't think that's entirely what it's meant to be. Like one of the things I learned about Japan, especially like the Kansai region in Kyoto in particular, is that it is so humid there that like mold is unavoidable.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So like you can see like there's mold growing all over the place. Like not like the kind that will make you sick or anything, but it's just like, there's stains on walls and stuff from it, just intense humidity that lasts basically half the entire year, and you can't get rid of it, and it's just everywhere. And there's a lot more insects, and like you'll see a lot of dead bugs in the like trapped in things. Like this game kind of represents that reality in a way that is not necessarily making it I don't think it's meant to be like, oh, these people live in filth. I think it's more just like, this is actually, no, this is really what a house in the countryside kind of looks like on the inside. It's not dirty, they keep things very clean, but it's a used house, it's a realistic depiction.
You also learn later in the game that this family had another son who died and you got his room.
Yes, there's that.
And there are things that are left there that definitely his.
Mm-hmm. I guess the risk of people playing the game is pretty low, so we don't have to worry about spoiling that.
But yeah, yes, I don't think this is really a game can spoil. I mean,
no, yeah, and there's other cute there's other cute scenes and plot lines you can travel along.
Yeah, it's so I guess that's the last thing I'll say about that, but I just wanted to mention that because I remember thinking about that when I was looking at the game again. I was like, that's really about the most accurate.
Yeah.
It's one of those many details that in this one, it's intentional, but like you do learn a lot about the way that things look in Japan from playing video games, but not intentionally. For example, like if you played River City Ransom, you learn like, oh, this is what, like, you know, they don't have sidewalks really. And there's like drainage canals on either side of the road that are covered by little cement slabs. It's supposed to, you know, like the way they localize it, it's like, you know, it's in River City. It's like in any town USA, you know,
yeah.
It's like all the stuff is still like, it's their basic street scene. But this one, it's like that, but it's of course intentional because it is supposed to be what it is. And that's, I really admire that kind of detail. Like it's something you still don't see, in many games just because it's hard to do because you'd have to render it or something or create textures for it.
Yeah.
And it's just not possible. But with this kind of lo-fi, you know, static background, it is possible. Anyway, in terms of ranking, we got to put like, I do like, what was it like? Above or below Kentucky Route Zero? I mean, we're not saying how far, but like, what do you think?
I'll just say that I really wanted to place higher than Echo the Dolphin, so I'd put it.
Yeah, this would put it in the company of Yar's Revenge.
I'd put it between Yar's Revenge and Echo the Dolphin.
Yoshi's Island. This show is terrible. I'm so sorry. Why did I do this to you? I don't know. Yeah, what do you think? Like, above, so just besides Echo the Dolphin, like what do you just pretend that's
Here's what I also saw was Morrowind, and that's another game that I really enjoyed just walking around in and sort of appreciating that sort of scenery in that game.
That's true. I mean, it was like a completely made up crazy ass scenery, but it did feel.
But like that's sort of how I play Elder Scrolls games. I don't really play the RPG part. I'm really just a walking around sort of guy in those games. And then I don't have to get hung up on how bad the gameplay is or whatever.
Yeah, you could get mauled by a bear or a gigantic crab.
Yeah.
It could happen. Either one.
Of course, this is a bit farther down than Kentucky Route Zero.
Yeah, but that's a good... I mean, that's a good... It's a good comparison point.
I think this
game is much better at doing what it sets out to do, whereas any Elder Scrolls game is always like a catastrophic failure wrapped in the trappings of like a AAA good game. Like they're all great in a way, but they're also incredibly bad in a lovable way. And whereas this game, I think, is just nails what it sets out to do. And the only way you can improve upon it is by learning from what you did the last time.
Right. Yeah.
So let's say below Kentucky Route Zero then, just because there are other My Summer Vacation games that kind of get better than this.
Hey, Super Mario Sunshine, that's the ultimate summer platformer.
Yeah. The feel-good hit of the summer platform. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's, what about...
Actually...
Yeah.
Yeah, around Super Mario Sunshine, how about right next to Suzuki Bakuhatsu, just because, like, two examples of the kind of Japanese games that you don't really get in the West.
That's okay, right. I just heard that episode, too.
Yeah. Do we want to put it above or below Suzuki Bakuhatsu?
I think it's probably a better game than Suzuki Bakuhatsu.
Yeah, but it's not about a game about like a really bored lady who diffuses bombs in her breakfast.
Yeah, I know.
Like it's tough to beat that. Like, I'd like to think that. There should be a shared universe, though. You're right.
It's the same vintage of PS1 game, and it is, you know, I think they both did... sort of innovative artistic things just in different ways.
Year, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we got to wrap this up.
Let me just stick it to the Retro Pals. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Okay. So it goes above Suzuki Bakuhatsu, below Laura Bow, Dagger of Amun-Ra.
All right.
Sounds perfect. Yes.
Yeah. That's where it goes. Boku no Natsuyasumi. I think I got that right. My Summer Vacation. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go out. Just go hit the country. Just go meet some crazy locals and have a good time and live it up. Don't bring your Game Boy. just give it a shot. But then go back to playing video games and listening to this show.
I'd say bring your PSP because those also have the Natsuyasumi games on them.
Oh, that's true.
That's how I play them.
Yeah.
If you've got a still functioning PSP, maybe you probably should donate that to a museum or something. But yeah.
I have two, right? Right
here. That's impossible. I do not believe you. I do not believe you.
And they both work.
No. They just die. They're made to be broken.
Well, I think they work. The last time I turned them on was like...
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt about mine. It's like, I can't believe this thing is still... Oh, okay, no, it doesn't work. It turns on, but nothing else works. Anyway, thank you, Oren, for joining us, and Ray, of course. really appreciate it. It was kind of a last minute cobbled together show, but I think it turned out really well. And again, where can we find you, Ray?
Okay, yeah. Well, first of all, yeah, thanks for having me again. I'm always ready to jump in and talk about this game, that's for sure. So, yeah, I'm on Twitter. You can find most of my, activities on there. That's RDBAAA. That's like two sets of initials I use in arcade initials. The website for my game company is bipedal.dog. The website for the game I made so far is blastrush.com. I also do a sort of goofy podcast with my best friend called No More Whoppers, and that's at nomorewhoppers.tumblr.com. Thank God Tumblr got bought by a good company. Don't have to worry about moving anywhere. But yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, and of course, Scroll, because it's so related to this whole thing, but that's scroll.vg. Either way, you can find it through one of those other websites that I already mentioned. And yeah, issue 10 is the one about Boku no Natsuyasumi. And,
Oren, do you have are you on another show?
I am. I am on Podcast Regular Slow Beef Soda Podcast, a visual novel book club, where we spend a long, long time talking about visual novels.
Which is an excellent show to listen to if you don't nominate any more visual novels for this show. Just listen to that show. It's much better. They'll do a much better job.
You can find it wherever you find podcasts or on Slow Beef's YouTube channel.
Yes, wherever fine podcasts are streamed, check it out. Visual novel book club. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like Oprah's book club, but for weebs. exactly. Thanks, both of you. And thank you, listeners. We'll wrap at you next time.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent, Jeff Rude, our theme song, MC Norm. Check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter. And our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter, Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GCNRX and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.